Okay, let's get some response here from our producer programmers, Janice K. Bryant and Bernard White, because you raise a lot of interesting issues there.
You know, there was a lot of talk in the over the last period about professional sound and sounding professional. And what that generally meant was that you would eliminate a lot of people in the community who have stories to tell, who may split infinitives, whose birds and subjects may not agree, but have a very interesting and important story to tell. And professional sounding meant that you would eliminate those people. So, professional for us has to mean something else. It has to mean that we go after issues and try and get those issues out.
But at the same time, you don't want to, it's not a question of professionalism, it's a question of respecting the medium and doing it competently. If you have people who have, you have four people in a room and one of them has their mic off and the other has it half on and somebody's at twice the volume, listen, just don't turn that off.
And I think there's a difference in the person that you're interviewing and the person who you want to hear do your 6:30
on a regular
news.
Basis.
Yes. I think you would. I don't see that you can't. It's not mutually exclusive to have a progressive mind and to sound professional. And I think Amy and Bernard are, and Larry, you're good examples. You know, you all, you don't break a lot of verbs. I mean, unless it's intentional. I'm concerned, and I've been hearing this. I'm going to talk about it this afternoon. I hope we're not going to start to go on war about music now amongst ourselves.
Oh, yes, we are.
And
because it keeps going on.
It just keeps coming up, and I've been taking notes, and I started talking to Mariah about it because she brought it today. She said that, Gallardin, she said I had misunderstood her, so we're going to really have to have this discussion. Music has so much informed revolutions and movements, and it's such a part of life in this world. I don't know why people, where this is coming from, that we want to separate music from politics. And what I learned from Bernard White is that music punctuates the political point. And it has so much, sometimes it just takes things to another level. And you don't have to say anything with the right music sometimes.
The right music, but what is the right music? When I hear people playing music on Pacifica stations that I know is popular, commercially available, sometimes even available on commercial stations, I say to myself, is this or is this not what we're supposed to be doing? And this is an ongoing debate and discussion that's been going on at least at KPFA that I've been around for 32 years. I don't expect we're going to resolve it here this afternoon.
No, I don't think so.
Rick in Los Angeles, thanks for joining us.
No, this is Rick in New York.
Oh, Rick in New York.
He moved.
How'd you get there that fast?
Well, I'm one of the Banned and Fired listeners who has, through all of 2001, fought hard to save our station and bring it back through writing many letters, emails, faxes, and contributing to the myriad organizations that you referred to earlier, like the Pacifica Campaign, WBIX, Democracy Now in Exile, Free Speech Radio News, Concerned Friends. I can go on and on with the list, but you get the idea. The opening aim of all these groups was to bring back the Banned and Fired producers, which I'm very happy that we have done. Now, at the time they were brought back, we were told that a program review committee would be put in place to review any further situations before anyone else was banned and fired. So my question to you, Mr. White, is why did you tell Anastasia that her program would be taken off?
So wait a minute here. I know you have something to say there, and I want to get it, but the problem is here that the meeting is beginning again. Bernard, he had a specific program kvetch that he wanted to get out, but how about dealing with the process instead of the specific program, that there was going to be a program review committee? Is there one? Because we've got to go back to the podium right now. Go ahead.
We had the first meeting of the program council I guess it was Thursday. What we did was I brought together the members who were part of the last program council, which met fairly regularly before the coup, although it was mentioned that they never met, but we did meet. And what we did was try and establish a process for getting a full complement of members on the program council. So the program council will be part of that will establish the criteria for the review committee. You can't just bring together a committee and have no criteria for them to deal with. So that's what we're in the process of doing right now.
I want to assure listeners they're not missing anything. The woman who called before and said I talk over the chair, I'm pretty conscious of what the chair is saying, and when she's saying things like close the doors in the back or you can pick out leaflets, I tend to talk over that. Right now she's just asking for people to gather the folks here in the auditorium at Virgil Middle School. If you're listening in the Los Angeles area and you want to attend this meeting today or tomorrow, we're at Vermont and First. And I should tell listeners who want to call in, tomorrow we'll be doing another call-in show for 2 hours live from here, 9 to 11 a.m. West Coast, same time, same station. It will be noon to 2 p.m. East Coast, and we'll be joined by WPFW, I'm happy to say, in Washington, D.C. at that time. Bernard White, thank you very, very much for joining us here.
Thank you, Larry. Folks will be listening to you in New York tomorrow, I guess.
I hope they will, and they'll be listening, and they'll be phoning in, same phone number. I also wanted to say that one of the last times I was on the air at WBAI in New York was with Grandpa Al Lewis, right before he was fired and banned. He was interviewing me in Berkeley. So you know what, it already hit the fan in New York, and he somehow still had his program. And we were talking about you, and I said, I want you to tell Bernard White, don't worry, he's going to get his job back. And I never doubted. Now, I'm not saying I knew how long it was going to take or how much damage would take. I never doubted we were going to win. And I want to thank you very much for your efforts in helping us.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to go back to Leslie Kagan, who's the board chair. You're listening to live coverage of the Interim Pacifica National Board meeting from Los Angeles. The first meeting in 4 years in Los Angeles. And the national board consists of 14 people, 11 of whom have been present at one time or another last night and today. The people who are now in the majority of the board, 10 of them are here. The now dissident minority is only one person. And here is Leslie Kagan. We'll begin as soon as the treasurer appears. Jabari Zakiya, and he is going to have a horrific tale to tell. We've alluded to it here in this break, of the debt and the amount of money that we owe in Pacifica and what we're doing about it. We had some of this in the executive director's report last night. Since it's been mentioned a lot of times here already, people may be curious as to who's on the Pacifica board. Of the 14 members who are now on, 7 are African-American. 7 or not. They're people, I guess you could call Caucasian. There are, as one speaker said earlier, no Asian Americans, no Latinos, no Native Americans on the board at this present time. This is an interim board. The whole point of this board is to put structures into place to replace themselves by the end of this year, or I believe the beginning of next year. And that is going to be done through elections of local advisory boards, which is one of the items on the agenda this afternoon, how to figure out how to do that. So the Interim Pacifica Board is just that, an Interim Pacifica Board. There are 10 men and 4 women, and the chair is Leslie Kagan, a longtime political activist in New York, who took over the board chair after a legal settlement of the 4 pending lawsuits against Pacifica by listeners, by board members. Yes, we are.
If we are, I especially want to welcome, again, people who maybe haven't been listening yet or who've just joined us recently, the listening audience, both people listening to our webcast, and want to thank, again, the folks from WBIX and helping to make that possible, and also those of you listening to the radio broadcast at several of our stations around the country. And we want to, again, thank all the technical folks, all the people who put together the equipment and hooked up the equipment and brought the microphones and arranged for the lines to work and all of that. It's what makes it all possible. We want to thank Larry Bensky for anchoring today's broadcast in the best tradition of Pacifica. And most importantly, we want to thank you all for listening. I don't know where you are out there. Here in Los Angeles, it's a beautiful day. So those of you who are staying home instead of enjoying the sunshine, we especially thank you. Again, though, if you are in Los Angeles and want to come join us, we will be here until about 6 today and then tomorrow from 9 to 1. And we're at the Virgil Middle School at 152 North Vermont, which is at the corner of Vermont and First Street. So there's still time to come down and see us and talk with us and let us hear from you. But again, we really welcome the listeners around the country who are committed, so committed to your own local station and so committed to the progress that we are trying to make in rebuilding this network, that we that you take the time out of a weekend to listen. And hopefully this will lead to your greater involvement. I just want to thank, during the lunch break, there was a meeting of listener activists from around the country, and I believe it was at that meeting that apparently over $400 was raised right here today to help defray the cost of the room rentals. So, again, this is exactly the kind of financial support that we continue to need. Clearly, it's not only financial support that we need your active involvement with your local advisory boards, with your listener activist groups, volunteering at the stations, as well as sending the money. And again, I want to remind those of you who are listening, and first of all, thank those of you who are listening who made pledges during the recent fund drives. There was an incredible statement of support for the new leadership and the new direction throughout the network. But we want to remind you who made those pledges to now go to your checkbooks and actually write out those checks and drop them in the mail. The as important as making the pledge is sending the money in and fulfilling that pledge. And don't feel bad if you weren't able to make a pledge during the fund drive in your city. You can do it right now. I'm sure you can call your station right now or skip the calling part. Just send in a check right now. You don't have to give only during the fund drive. You can give any day of the year. So please give that money. Thank you very much. All right. Now, let me just say, for those of you who are in the Los Angeles area, there is a party tonight from 6 to 9. That's after our board meeting. The board has some other business to attend to for a few hours, but then I hope all of us, I know I will be going to the party, and would love to meet you all. Anyway, the party is at the Holman United Methodist Church, which is 3320 West Adams Boulevard, 3320 West Adams Boulevard in Los Angeles. And in addition to a whole lot of music and poetry, apparently there will be a screening tonight of the Democracy Now! Video, Crashing the Stock Market. I think that's at 8:45. I actually haven't seen the video, but I hear it's a remarkable piece of theater taken during a hoity-toity party. I don't know what else to call it. A party of the ruling elite of this country and the world that was held down at Wall Street, down the stock market, during the World Economic Forum meetings in New York. And Amy Goodman and another person whose name I don't have at my fingertips, I'm sorry about that, managed to find their way into the party and do some creative work there. So, anyway, that will also be, along with the music, along with the food, and along with just the good time and socializing, those of you in the L.A. area, please come tonight, Holman United Methodist Church, 3320 West Adams Boulevard. There is a requested donation of $5. If you can give more, that's great, but if you can't, don't worry about it. Okay, I think we now have a quorum and are ready to move on with our agenda. Again, I want to thank everybody on the board for being very, very patient with the delays in our agenda. We are running about an hour late. We have several important agenda items, which we scheduled quite a bit of time for the two next agenda items, so maybe we'll pick up a little time. We may not need quite as much. The first, though, is on the financial situation, a finance committee report and discussion of our finances. Let me just say that our controller, Yasmin Bryan, who flew out from Washington to be with us for this weekend and particularly to help in this part of the discussion, apparently has is ill, is not feeling well. So I don't know if she's going to make it over here. If she's not here now, I have a feeling she's not going to make it. She's stuck in a hotel room. So we're very, very sorry about that. But other members of our national staff are here, and I think can help guide us through some of this discussion. We're going to lead this off with a report, a presentation by our treasurer, Jabari Zakia. So, Jabari, you're on. How much do you need?
This got down here an hour and a half.
Let me, actually, before you start, I've been asked by several people during the break and been given notes to thank some individuals and some organizations for the incredible work that they did getting us to this point in this struggle. I'm not going to do that because no matter who or how long the list is, I'm going to forget somebody. Somebody important to this struggle is going to be left off that list, and I'm not going to do that. I think that what we need to do is recognize that we have gotten this far in this work to rebuild this foundation because a whole lot of community groups, a whole lot of individuals, a whole lot of members of local advisory boards and producers at different stations, a whole lot of people realize that not only did they individually have to jump in, but they needed to work collectively with other folks. And it was in the building of a movement that we were able to turn this around. So I want to say thank you on behalf of the board and our station managers and our lab folks. I want to say thank you to all those people and all those players and not get into the name game. That's the way I want to handle it. So if everyone would just join me in a round of applause for everyone who's gotten us here, that'd be great. Okay, so what I think we need to do, we heard yesterday from Verna Avery Brown and Dan Coughlin, who gave us an overview of some of our financial reality. Actually, Dan is, I see, sitting out there. Maybe if you could come up to the table, and Verna, I don't know where Verna is right now. If Dan and Verna could both be at the table, because
they're WBAI, New York.
And information that you have access to, you know, more readily than anybody else. That'd be great. But we are going to begin with a treasurer's report from Jabari Zakia. Jabari, if you could do that in about 15 minutes or so, give an overview of, you know, the main issues that the board needs to pay attention to and what questions we need to answer, that'd be great.
Okay, well, really, I just want to, I don't want to reiterate things that have already been said by Dan and Verna. So what I would like to do is discuss, in a holistic sense, some of the issues that I think face the foundation that will impact the financial viability of the organization in the future. So I just want to talk about maybe 30 minutes, 35, and then just open it up for questions on specific issues.
I'm sorry, Jabari, if you could try and do it shorter, like in 15 minutes. I know there's a lot, but I think stuff will come out in the discussion. The board really needs to be involved in the discussion part of this. So if you could try and just zero in on the most critical points.
Okay, well,
thanks.
I'll just give my report. As people know, people have heard about the financial situations concerning the debt of the foundation, and I basically like to just say that I think that though there are issues that we can work this thing out, that it's not a prohibitive type of thing. The patient is in. We are in intensive care. We still have IVs in our arms. We need to have fluids to replace the hemorrhaging that has taken place, but it's doable. We've just come through a fund drive where we basically have pledged almost $3 million pledged, with one station still to go in their pledge drive. So there is a element of hope, and there is an element of manageability in this situation that I just basically want to project. What we have to do is be efficient in the sense of operations, and we have to be visionary in the sense of expanding to where we need to go as a foundation to take into account what the resources are to do what I think the mission calls for us to do and to accomplish many of the things that have already been presented here today and yesterday. So what I want to do is talk about some of the things that will, I think, affect the financial status and structure of the organization, but I think fits in with a lot of discussions about the future vision of Pacifica as an organization. One of the things I want to be clear is that one of the things that we have to get in order is our accounting system. The accounting system that is now in place doesn't work the way we needed to have it work. So we're in the process of getting the accounting system to be designed to do exactly what we want it to do so that all the business managers can operate the same way and that there will be a cohesive set of policies and practices put in place so that everybody operates on the same page and that all the information we need is obtainable in a timely fashion and is in a secure manner. So we're in the process of getting that done. We're going to have training of the business managers so that all the business managers get trained at the same time on the same system so that we can all operate the same. We also want to put in place a finance committee that will encompass members of the board and the business managers and people from the LABs and other interested parties, because what we need to do is create a sustainable, cohesive organizational structure that will open up the financial situation so that you will have checks and balances throughout the network on everybody's financial status so that there will be no surprises because everybody can see all the time what the financial status and health of the foundation is. So we're going to get that in place so that everybody can basically monitor the ongoing operations of the foundation. Also, what I want to do is begin to put in place some what I could say alternative streams of revenue generation that Pacifica has not traditionally been involved with. Presently, Pacifica is about a $12 million corporation. In other words, Pacifica has over about the last 2 years been operating on a budget revenue stream of $12 million. Most of that money, about 85% of that money, has come solely from listener support, the fund drives. Another $1.2 million have come from CPB, Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And then we have some other, only one other major source of revenue, which is the sideband, the SCA, that was spoken of earlier. What we need to do is create multiple streams of revenue that are consistently being obtained every day. We haven't leveraged PRA, the Pacifica Radio Archives, to nowhere near the level of viability, financial viability that they are capable of sustaining, which would actually do two things. Right now, the units, the stations, spend more money than they should on premiums to attract money from their listeners. We need to use the wealth of information in the archives so that we can offer premiums that are internally generated instead of going out to third parties to buy tapes, books, and other things that basically put us in a hole, so we have to fund drive just to support the fund drive. So that doesn't really make a lot of sense. We should look for internal forms of premium offerings so that everything that we get is pure profit and not in the state that we have been, where we have to have, just for this past fund drive, we had over $90,000, $100,000 worth of outstanding premiums that hadn't been paid from the last fund drive. So we need to be more visionary in the sense that we need to have multiple streams of revenue generation. Simple things that we can do that we don't do. We don't even, at Washington, we don't even offer tapes of some of our most popular hosts that people would buy instantly if they knew they could just call up and say, I want a tape of certain shows, they would get it. And I'm sure that's true of all the stations. We need to have a closer tie with the archives and the stations in that. What I also want to do is to have our websites to be more functional and so that they can generate revenue. We need to have PayPal accounts and other kind of electronic accounts on all of our websites so that people all around the world can purchase and make donations electronically so that we can generate these streams all the time. We also just need to have a culture embedded into the programming so that programmers and station managers are constantly in a revenue-generating mode. So that is not just it's not just a three-time-a-year type of mode, but we need to be in a constantly thinking way of generating revenue. Another thing that we need to be doing seriously is we need to create a Pacifica endowment or something of that nature, because the bottom line is we are a $12 million company in revenues traditionally, which means basically we have to generate about $1 million a month to just operate the way we are. Payroll on a monthly basis is about almost between $400,000 to $450,000 now, and probably will go up close to $500,000. Actually, what we need to do is we need to be able to increase staff at not only the station level that you've heard many of the GMs talk about. They need more staff. They need program directors. They need other positions. But we also need to increase staff at the national level, because in my estimation, there are functions that need to be done that we haven't done, and there are no positions to do it. A very good case in point is we need a technology director staff, because a radio network is a highly technical enterprise. You cannot operate a radio network efficiently on duct tape and shoestrings. Many of the GMs talked about the physical deterioration of their infrastructure. Tape recorders that don't work. We have an issue with the KU because the transmitter nitrogen leaks. We have all of these things, and when you don't hear Democracy Now! Come on because of some little problem, it's because there's been a deterioration in the infrastructural capability of the various network components to do their job. In other words, stuff is breaking. Stuff is breaking, and it needs to be fixed, and it needs to be replaced. We need an in-house staff that is just dealing with technical infrastructure. We need network administrators at each station to deal with the financial system and the computer infrastructure. We need transmission specialists who can go out and maintain, monitor, and perform maintenance on our physical infrastructure, our transmitter, the antenna infrastructure, and then we need some just other things too. So we need to increase our capacity to deal with our physical infrastructure, which will require personnel. That personnel, of course, is going to require money, and we need to build toward creating that in-house capacity to deal with our physical infrastructure, because if we don't deal with our physical infrastructure, we can't get anything out on the air. If we can't get anything out on the air, we don't exist as a network. So that's the bottom line there. Also, there's some other issues about developmental things that we really have to consider that go to the mission of Pacifica. One of the things that I want to deal with is that as part of one of the hot issues, we had an issue of having a national program director. In fact, a lot of the issues concerning programming at the station level really, I think, should come under the rubric of a national program director that could put together some cohesive policies and programs that would be directive in helping the stations fulfill the mission of their local programming. Also, from my perspective, to get to the mission that other people spoke to, that the national, the Pacifica Foundation has a certain specific mission to do certain things that only can be done at a national level. Give me an example. In August, this coming August, there will be a million person reparation march in Washington. We need to be planning to do a live coverage of that event, in my mind, and that requires coordination at the site among all the five listening areas. From my perspective, there's certain programming that I think should be mandatory throughout the network at given times. We need to have some kind of coordination with not only the policy making and the coordination of that within the station, but also the physical capacity to actually pull off these types of broadcasts when they are deemed necessary to be done. Again, that's a cost structure that has to be borne out if that is to be actually done in the real world. That will, of course, increase payroll. That will, of course, increase other expenditures. Bottom line is, right now, I think we need to be looking toward expanding our capability and, in fact, expanding the network. The last station that came into Pacifica was Washington. That was 25 years ago. That station didn't even come. That station first went on the air in 1977. The process to get the license for WPFW began in 1968. It took 9 years to get the station on the air. Okay? It took 9 years to get the station on the air, and we have not had another station being brought into the network since then. You can't grow by staying stagnant. We need to grow. There's too much at stake. We need to grow. But in order to grow... In order to grow, we need to double our financial capacity. We need to go from a $12 million a year revenue-generating organization to about a $25 million a year generating revenue organization within a certain time period to do some of these things. So the way to do that is to do many of the things that we just did this past week. We need directed fundraising or for specific things at given times. We need to have consistent revenue-generating alternative streams. We need to increase the capacity all around of the revenue-generating capacity throughout the network. At the same time, we need to consolidate and become more efficient in the operational structure of the organization wherever we can see those gains being achieved. So a lot of these things are operational. A lot of these things, though, can only be done if there is a vision statement that says they are to be done. One of the things I would like to see us as a board do is to put together a 5-year strategic plan that says here's the most important things we want to do within the next 5 years, and then manifest that plan in an operational procedure policy or manifesto that say here's how we will structurally build up to fulfill this strategic plan. Because other people have strategic plans to say we were going to destroy Pacifica. We need to have a strategic plan that says we're going to grow no matter what you're going to do, because we have too much of an important mission to take care of, and we can't rely on just staying stagnant. You can't go forward by treading water. We need to go forward. We need to start to swim in a direction that will bring us into the 21st century. Another thing that I want to say is that we need to have a closer tie-in with the technology that's not only coming around the horizon, coming over the horizon, but is here. Some people already brought up the issue of micro-programming or low-power programming that the FCC has actually allowed to happen. There's been a rush on licenses to get low-power licenses in various communities. A lot of these licenses have been gobbled up by so-called Christian broadcast people and things like that. We need to be on top of these technical aspects when the FCC comes out of this thing. There's another technology coming down the pike called ultra-wideband transmission or ultra-wideband broadcasting, which is a totally different new kind of transmission. I don't know if people know, but when Pacifica was founded in 1946, Lou Hill and the people who started the foundation tried to get an AM station, which is amplitude modulation, because that was the thing, that was the technology of vogue then. And there was this thing called FM that really nobody really used, but they couldn't get an AM station, so they said, well, okay, we'll just get an FM license because they were cheap, no one else was using it. But you know what? People didn't have FM radios. So what they did was basically say, you buy a subscription, we'll give you an FM radio so you can listen to the thing. And so what we have to do is take more advantage of the technology such as the webcasting. We have to take advantage of the ultra wideband that's coming around the horizon. We have to become more involved with our affiliates. One of the things I would like to see as part of this 5-year strategic plan is that there are some affiliates that I think that we can bring into the umbrella of the network if we make the network more attractive to the affiliates. There are stations in other areas that would probably be willing to consider coming into the network if they see a benefit into being in the network. But of course, you don't want to come into somebody's mess if you can't see a benefit for doing that. So we got to get our house in order, because we cannot go out and just buy FM stations like you used to because all the stuff is being brought. But we need to be in places that we're not in. We need to be in Chicago because we're nowhere in the Midwest. We need to be in Boston. We need to be in Phoenix. We need to be in Denver. We need to be everywhere it is where there's a big, big non-white, traditionally oppressed groups of people. We need to be in those places. We need to be confronting the message that these warlords are putting out that are being consumed by the people that we want to say we want to help. We got to be where the action is, and we can't be there by stagnating. We have to grow. We have to have a plan to grow, and we need to plan to get the resources to grow. So in particular, because I don't want to go too much into the minutia of our operations, that we are in the process of coming out of this thing. With the fund drives, we have created a sense of breathing room where we're not in this constant crisis mode where we're worried about, can we meet payroll this week? We have payroll every 2 weeks. Payroll is about $230,000 and it will go up. So that's almost basically, like I say, almost $500,000. So we're coming out of this crisis mode. We really need to start to get into more of a visionary mode. The board needs to start to assess where we're going to take the foundation in the next 5 to 10 years so that we can manifest those costs throughout the foundation and to begin some of the alternative of construction of policies, practices, and plans so that we can get the revenue and people in place to take Pacifica into the 21st century. So I'll just leave it there. If people want to get more into the details, unfortunately Yasmin became sick, but she left a package of information that I think Joyce has, a packet that was meant to be passed out to everyone on the board that we can talk about.
Right.
So if other board members want to get into the package, which basically deal with policies and some of the numbers from the accountant's report, we can get into that. But from the point of view of the viewers, I think, and the listeners, I think it's important to recognize that yes, we are still in a crisis, but we're stabilizing. We're stabilizing the outflow of revenue. We've increased the inflow of revenue. We're consolidating the operations. We are becoming more efficient. We should be much more efficient next month than we are now, and that there is a plan that will keep us online to not fall farther behind. And when some of these other issues with the outstanding bills become settled, we will not only be coming out of the hole, but hopefully within the next 2 to 3 years, because it will take some time. This probably is a 2 to 3 year process that we're talking about before we could become what I would consider, quote, in the black, where we have no outstanding operational debt. So if we keep true to those things, we can get to that point, and we can then deal with some of these other strategic issues.
Thank you.
Pacifica's acting treasurer, Jabari Zakia.
Yeah, he has traveled all the way from Washington to be with us right for this part of the agenda, and she's sick. She's ill over at the hotel.
Those who wish to consult the February 9th auditor's report figures can do so by logging on to www.savepacifica.net, and you'll see a link to the auditor's report and the auditor's comments about what the auditor felt should be done about the report. www.savepacifica.net. Dan Coughlin, who's the interim executive director in Verna A. Brown, the assistant
open it up for board
executive director, are both here.
Okay, Carol just wants to.
This is Carol Spooner, board member from Northern California.
Carol just was asking if a packet is here. I think Yasmin was going to bring them over with her.
Unfortunately, I think they're with her in the hotel room.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Dan, did you want to say a few things? Or?
Yeah, I could. There's not much more I can add in specifics. Obviously, I know everybody's concerned about two things. One is the audit from FY 2001, and we'll we're expecting an audit to start on April 22nd. And I know folks want to get those numbers, so thank you for your patience with that process. But when we, of course, inherited the office, everything was in chaos, and the first thing we had to do was an independent financial review of the books, and that happened, and you got that report, I think, in early February, and now the audit's going to happen in late April. That's very important to the organization because our various other sources of revenue depend upon that audit, such as CPB grants. We're operating also, as you all know, not on a fiscal year budget. There is no FY 2002 budget at all approved by this board, which is highly unusual, but of course, given the circumstances, not unreasonable. But we are operating within the office on a calendar year budget. And just to let you know that we anticipate about $10 million in revenue for this calendar year. And again, these are just guidelines to help us evaluate where we are and where we're going over the months ahead in the absence of any approved budgets from the board. So we're operating on a calendar year budget with an anticipated projected revenue of about $10 million for this year, and unfortunately expenses of about $10.7 million. So we're still projecting a budget shortfall for this year of approximately $700,000. And we do have to obviously shrink that, and we're working on that. We think we'll be able to shrink the projected budget shortfall, not through cuts. I know everybody has sustained a lot of cuts already, but we're projecting some more revenue raising should be able to get us out of the hole over the course of the next period of time. As I mentioned to you yesterday, we do need to raise $1.5 million by May 15th and another $2 million by October 15th. That's what we need to raise over and above our normal on-air fundraising. But again, through various means, through extra fundraising, direct mail shots, approaching high donors, organizing different celebrity events, organizing Save Our Stations committees throughout the country, listeners rallying behind the network, and of course looking at other sources of revenue from subcarriers to our real estate assets, we think we'll be able to bridge that gap in the near future. In terms of our objectives, some of our financial objectives, you heard from the station managers, which we're very proud of, that we've been able to operate, implement getting local station accounts going again. When we first inherited the network, local stations couldn't even buy so much as a paperclip. But now that they have that capacity, and that's actually a very important thing. Verna, do you have anything you want to add?
Here we are in Radio Land.
Right. Not being a controller, I'm regretting the fact that Yasmin is not here more than you are, Carol. But I think one thing that's important to remind everybody about is the fact that we've already articulated that we are not out of the woods yet. And even though we have made significant progress towards reducing this debt, and we have a number of projects on the table and in the works now, we mentioned yesterday that our law firm is looking into placing to getting loans against some of our property, and that seems to be an option that has given us some reason for early optimism. We have started brainstorming this weekend to create a number of avenues that would help us to generate revenue. Clearly, the idea of creating national programming is one that's lucrative, and I think that there's an appeal for it in this audience and in our listening audience at large as well. We've got a number of events coming up that we intend to tap into. Some are seem to be tailor-made for Pacifica. In April, we will be organizing a national program around events that are scheduled in the Washington, D.C. area, and you'll hear more about that as time moves forward. But I also think it's important that stations understand that from time to time, until we actually get out of the woods with this, we're going to have to rely on the stations to help support the national office, because until we have been able to generate a revenue stream, we will have to do some. We'll have to rely on the local stations to contribute. The ideal is to ultimately have completely autonomous budgets, and I know this is something that Yasmin was going to speak on today, and I'm really disappointed that she isn't here to expound on that. Because we understand how important that is to the stations to have a budget that's completely autonomous. You engage in a fundraising event and have a very successful one, and you want to be able to say to have that money go largely to your operating needs, et cetera. But until we can move out of the woods on this, there will be some reciprocal exchanges of finances between the stations back and forth to national. That's pretty much all.
I want to add something based on some information that I've gotten, you know, in my several conversations with Yasmin over the last week or so, because I was kind of curious when I understood that, you know, upwards or around $3 million was pledged. I don't know what the fulfillment rate is so far, but let's say $2 million comes in, which would be a fairly low fulfillment rate. You know, that would mean that half our debt is paid, it would seem, or, you know, getting up there. But it doesn't work that way. And I think it's really important for people to understand that some of that money that comes in is going to paying back bills at each of the five stations. But also a significant amount of that money needs to be held. If all that money was used to pay back bills, then when the rent bill comes in next month and the electric bill comes in next month, then we'd be back in debt again. So a significant portion of the money raised through these fund drives is being held against the upcoming needs to make sure that we don't deepen crisis. So it's a balancing act that each of the stations and the National Finance Office are working out how to chip away at the old bills and be current on the new bills. And there are priorities within that. Payroll is a priority. Paying old back pay that people are owed is a priority. Making sure that rent and utilities and phone bills are paid is a priority. That's the bread and butter of the operations. And then obviously dealing with any pressing, urgent, threats from creditors to try and figure out how to keep them at bay. But clearly, meeting the payroll and the obligations to individuals who work with us and for us, has to be met in a very timely way. And I believe this is true, that through this crisis, we've not missed any payroll. And I think that is a real sign of the hard work that the National Office is doing to manage all this, and we should thank them again for all that work. So that's just another piece of the financial information. So I know several people had their hand up, so I'll just move down the table. Marion and then David and then Carol.
That was Leslie Kagan, and this is Marion Barry.
A couple of things. What's happening with the insurance company? And they have payments to lawyers and $400,000. Any movement on that yet?
Well, as you know, we addressed this last night. The law firm of Squire and Sanders and James Myworm have taken that on, and they've looked. The short answer is we have not actually received the $400,000. We're waiting to get the signatures on the release form, and they're actively pursuing that.
What about the money that's going to go to the lawyers that the foundation hired, Greg Craig and other people?
There's some movement on that, but because we're in this very public forum, I would like to perhaps discuss that.
No problem. And also, has Squire Sanders started working yet on trying to get some settlement on a number of these things?
Yes, the lawyer that we hired to negotiate with our large creditors has begun working. My understanding is he sent out letters to all of the large creditors saying he was representing us, and if people had claims, if their organizations or law firms or whatever had claims against the foundation, they should contact him, and then we would be willing to negotiate all that. So I think he's waiting for responses, but he has begun doing that work. Let me just say that the $400,000 that was referred to was part of the settlement agreement to the lawsuits, that the insurance company for the foundation is supposed to give a check for $400,000, which would be a nice check to get, and very needed check. What we are waiting for now is the signatures of the several of the defendants and plaintiffs in that. So if anybody here is supposed to be signing that, I know I signed it, we need to sign that paper right away. Once it's signed, we'll get, no, Rob, you don't have to sign it. We'll get it in two or three days, is my understanding.
A couple of points, Madam Chairperson. At our next to last Finance Committee meeting on the telephone, we were trying to identify either pro bono or part-time chief financial officer. Are we making progress on that yet?
We need to come back to that item. We will come back to that. I know Janice wants to speak.
The other issue, it seems to me that Zabari has really laid out a heck of an agenda for it. I know we got committees up to committees, but it seems to me that maybe you ought to appoint, with him being the chair, a three-person committee to do the strategic plan and bring it back to us.
Okay, well, let's come back to that also.
Right.
David, and then Janice.
David Fertig, board member from Los Angeles.
Inquiries.
Just so everyone knows, it takes a second for the people handling the mics. The mics are not all live.
WBAI, New York.
They bring it up.
I don't know if they can hear me now. First of all, I want to thank the national staff for being so prompt. When the accounting report, it wasn't really an audit, I understand, but when it was finally produced, that was on the web within about 24 hours, at least 10 pages of it. I'm curious whether the other 10 pages ever got on the Internet.
Yes.
Good. Thank you, Leslie.
I
didn't see it up there, that's all.
Well, so. I thought they were posted, so
no,
we...
The first 10 pages were on.
I've been reading it this week.
The second 10, good, thank you. And the second one is relative to future reports. I trust we'll be doing annual reports now that will be made public, correct? As to our actual expenses.
Yes.
Now, one of the problems in the report that we saw, based on the information that was available to them, not to fault the people that developed the report at all, but there were items such as special projects or, I think, general office, you know, where there are literally hundreds of thousands of dollars over budget. And I would insist or expect to see, that in the future any kind of line item reports not be so vague in the language describing them, and that insofar as there was a vagueness, that there'd be a breakdown, and furthermore, that anything more than, you know, say a given percentage of the budget be broken down so that there's no mystery as to the expenditure. Is that consistent with the staff intention?
Absolutely.
Thank
yes.
you.
Okay, Janice.
Janice K. Bryant, board member from New York.
Okay, these are really low-level questions because I'm a person who doesn't even balance her checking account. Okay, this, what you mentioned, Dan, about an audit that's beginning April 22nd, is that a regular annual audit that we would have even if we weren't in this crisis? Is this something special we call for?
No, it's a regular audit except that it's later than normal.
Okay.
We would typically have audits for the last fiscal year much earlier.
Are the same people doing this that did the...
Yes, the same firm that did the independent review of Pacifica's books in that early February report will be doing the audit.
This question, I guess, is for us, for the other directors. I know there was lots of discussion about us doing balance, getting a budget together. And now that seems to be gone. Are we creating a fiscal year budget, or what are
yes,
we going to do?
Yes, you'll have, based from the work from the audit, Jabari, as far as I understand it, we will be having FY 2002 budgets for your approval based upon that audit at the very latest. Then, of course, we'll be looking at fiscal year 03 very soon thereafter.
And the independent auditor's report, and this speaks to, I guess, Marion's question, how are we dealing with some of these points, specifically about the chief financial officer? Because that
that's one of the critical recommendations. But
that issue, just so everybody knows, when the report came out, which was February 9th, I believe it was, a week later, I immediately called for an emergency conference call meeting in executive session of the board a week later to review this because the reason why it was in executive session was because we thought it probably would have an impact on some personnel issues and therefore felt it was better to have an initial discussion should that be a reality in closed session. During that conference call, we began to talk about the recommendations from the folks who did, the accountants who did the report. One of those and several of those recommendations, in fact, have been implemented already, and maybe the staff can speak to that. But one of them was that we move toward having a treasurer / chief financial officer who would be somebody who's not on this board, who would report to the board, work very closely with the national staff, with the finance staff, and be, that bridge between the board and the office, be gathering the information that the board wants and needs, and making that available to us and to the public. That came up during that call, but my recollection is that we didn't take any action on that. So we do need to come back to that issue today. So if we could just hold on that, though, see if there are any other questions or issues that people want to raise. Carol and then Rob.
It's Carol Spooner, board secretary.
I'm just very sad that Yasmin is not well. I came to this meeting with, I have to admit, one crucial concern, and that is budgets. Doesn't sound like me, but that's where it's at for me, is we don't have a budget in front of us to review at this meeting, and we've been here on this board since December 29th, and we have tremendous problems throughout our network with accounting systems and posting things to ledgers and so forth. But a budget is normally prepared before the end of the fiscal year, not after an audit at the end of the fiscal year. So I know the books were closed at the end of September. The books that all the station managers got their general ledgers to review and make adjustments, and I think we're very behind in preparing a budget, not based on an audit, but based upon our proven income and our anticipated expenses, and with line items, and with the actual spelled out percentage that's going to national based on either the formula that was used in the past, which I have in front of me, I got it from Eileen Carr at KPFA, or some other formula that tells our station managers what their contribution is to the national, so that we can, whenever something is coming up or happens, we can tell at the end of the month whether we're over or under our projections. If we're under our projections, if we're not raising what we need to, then, I mean, we go into emergency mode. The labs get mobilized. We ask our rich uncles. We do something. We don't find out 4 months later when the power is turned off. And likewise with expenses. I want to be able to look at the end. As a member of the Finance Committee of this board, I want to be able to look at a financial report at the end of every month to tell us whether we're over or under budget on our expenses, and what money went from KPFA, from our independent account, to assist somewhere else in the network. I want to see how much money went where. And I think this board needs to adopt a policy about how that money will be returned to KPFA, or if it's coming out of WBAI or KPFK to help another station. We need to be able to look at paper documents every month telling us what happened and where the money came from and where it went and how we relate to our budget. And we also have to spell out for our station managers and our listeners who are giving us the money where it's all coming and going. So that's very important to me. And I know that with the trans... I'm sorry, I'm just going on here. It's stream of consciousness. Sandra Rosas, who was the controller for, I believe, more than 18 years, was... her employment was terminated, I believe, last January. There was no controller until August, and the controller who came in found such chaos that she and also the executive director wouldn't listen to her recommendations, so she left. We've brought her back, but she doesn't have the institutional history of what the formulas are. So I would like to make a recommendation that the Finance Committee, at the conclusion of our meeting on Sunday, get together with Jim Bennett and Valerie Van Isler, who have the institutional memory about how to develop a station in a national budget, and figure out how to do it and get it done over the next 2 weeks.
Okay, thank you. Let's come back to Rob was next. Rob,